Welcome to What Won't You Say, a woman-centered podcast. I'm your host, Sonia Mastic. Stick around for the season to be inspired by amazing women who bravely delve into the stories of their lives, giving hope and inspiration to others. Together, we will explore such a wide array of topics that you will be asking yourself, what won't you say? All right, welcome back to another episode of Ted Lasso Recap. And today we are recapping episode 2 from season 3. Maybe I should have said season 3, episode 2. I don't know. Either way.
Same thing. We got it.
Either way. So I think let's launch right in. I mean, what are some of your takeaways from this as an overall theme of the show, this particular episode?
So I think consistently, what are we all here for? Who are we? You know, just existentially. Yeah. Why are we on the planet? I think that consistently is a thing. Examining what our purpose is and how it relates to other people.
I felt like this episode, taking more of a micro focus, is about strength. Keely found her strength to stand up to her CFO. Roy found the strength to be vulnerable. Rebecca found the strength to tell off Rupert. I mean, actually, to tell off Rupert in a way, as far as like confronting the new soccer player and that Zava, and confronting him in the bathroom while he's urinating, and she's like telling him basically like you're not shit, and because she can't stand up to Rupert, but she at this point, but she finds the strength to stand up to Zava and do that.
Yes.
So it was even like Keely's friend that she ends up hiring sort of has her strengths of like she's not from a university, she doesn't have the background, but she took control within the shoot. So I feel like everybody was sort of finding their strength and their footing. Even Leslie, you know, even though like I always comically die because he always gets the dry heaves when something bad is going on.
When he has to confront anything unpleasant. Yeah.
Yeah. But even he was like very much like, you know, my friend's cousin, sister's karate teacher knows the masseuse who, yeah.
Right.
So he was at least like useful, which I think to Leslie is a strength.
Uh-huh.
In a sense. And so to me, that felt like the theme was strength.
Yeah, that makes sense. I also feel like we're seeing a lot of growth from some of the characters like Jamie. You know, he's my God, this season he's been written so well already, you know, and he's performing it so beautifully. My favorite lines of the episode, when he said, I forgot, I won't even try to do his accent, but it's a spot on. I forgot how skittish elderly people get because of the war.
Yeah. He was trying to hug him.
Major Roy, who's like what, maybe 10 years older than him, you know,
maybe.
Like
yeah.
late 30s probably, you know. So yeah, just like he's constantly cutting him for being, you know, old, which is like in football and soccer years, Roy is ancient, you know, like that. Yeah. Is he was playing well past when most people stop, you know.
Yeah. But this was a whole, to me, this was a whole dissecting Roy. You find out why he's so angry with Trent Crim.
Right.
You find out why he's sort of morose about going back to Chelsea. And right. Even though they were celebrating, you know, the whole crowd was celebrating him and chanting the Roy Kent chant, he has that vulnerable moment in the locker room in front of, you know, Trent, who he despises, and says, you know, essentially, I didn't want to be the old man on the field, so I thought I had nothing left to give, so I left. But then now I'm regretting thinking that I had more to give. And I think it's also talking about the relationship with Keely in that moment.
I do too. Well, I think it was also, I didn't trust that I could let my people see me struggle. I couldn't let them see me be fully human with failings and stuff. And so I think you're absolutely right. He's talking about Keely too. You know, like it got too intimate, it got too hard, you know? And so he runs and goes, you know, to try to find something that's like, a distraction or something new that, you know, that will, that needs him, you know, that he knows he can serve instead of he'll have to maybe need them, you know, like he doesn't, I think that's it. He wants to be of service instead of need. Like you said, like he's, it's hard for him to be vulnerable. It's really, really hard.
Yeah. And you were finding out in this episode that that is literally the 100% of the gruff exterior.
Right.
Is scare them away before they hurt me.
Yes.
And yep. I think in all these different scenarios with Roy, they really leaned into that to show you this is what's going on. Even for the fact that multiple times Jamie tried to connect with them. And what you expected when he found out that he and Keely broke up was that Jamie would hit on Keely.
Right.
Of course, that's what you expect of his character. But instead, he went in and tried to hug the elderly man, Roy, and comfort him. He's like, I'm trying to comfort you, mate. And he's like, you know, you came up very too close. Like, it was this whole awkward.
Dusty old fart. Yeah.
But like, it was like too much of a sudden move for him, which is why he made the elderly war line. But yeah. So
the other parts of strength and power that we're seeing great leadership is twice. Like both Ted and Roy don't confront people in public in front of others. They take mm-hmm. them aside and they have these very compassionate conversations. And then also when Trent Crim fully owns, you know, so Roy basically has been carrying this grudge against Trent Crim, the reporter, since he was 17 when he wrote a review of him on his first Premier League debut. And he keeps it in his wallet, which also you know, of all of the success and awards that he's won for 20 some years, he that is most precious to him is this harsh review of when he was a child, right?
Yeah.
So, but when Trent gives him a very authentic, fully like owning apology, he accepts it, just like he did when Jamie apologized to him. So we're seeing beautiful apologies. We're seeing gorgeous leadership, you know, compassionate. I mean, they just do such a good job. And because they do it with humor and stuff, it never feels lectury or anything. It doesn't feel like we're being, you know, I don't know. It doesn't feel hokey or.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, Ted actually starts showing some fight, like pulling Roy aside and saying, you're going to mess things up with your ego and whatever it is that you have going on.
Right.
And so squash this right now so we can go back out at this game and actually win the game. But, you know, even Ted said it's not about the game. It's about so much more. So please figure out your shit.
Right. Well, and I think he's saying that as in we don't know exactly why it's so important for him to let Trent Crim write this book, but we know it is. I think he really respects Trent Crim and wants him to succeed. I think that's part of it. But also I think it's all about Keely. I think he's also saying your ego is going to really screw up your life because your relationship, it already is, you know.
But I think also they're showing what went on internally with Keely and her side of the relationship failing too. And I think they're showing that in when she finally stands up to her CFO for, you know, she's just awful. She's insecure. She's mean. She's learned to be mean. She seems like that's not who she is. And she probably seems like a really, you know, with the snow globes and everything, she's like this nerdy, goofy, probably silly girl underneath, you know, but she, you know, has learned to be kind of mean. And Keely goes into her office and basically confronts her for sort of being a mean girl to her friend. Uh-huh. And she finds her voice in other ways as well. Hiring her friend is a way of finding her voice, which they sort of, you know, nod to in the text that it might be a bad idea. But it's still her decision, you know, it's still she made the choice. And so
she's allowed to make bad choices along the way as she learns, you know.
Yeah. And I think that her always putting everybody first and not having her own thoughts, wants and desires also contributed to the relationship failing as it would. And I think they're sort of showing that as well, that she also needs to find her footing. She also needs to think of herself more than a woman who used to pose topless or a model or this or all. And there's nothing wrong with any of those things that I just said, but like just the negative connotations that go along with it.
Yeah. Yeah. She's still definitely trying to figure out her position. She was surprised when her friend said that we're also proud of you. What do you mean? Why?
Yeah.
You know, like she's not, I think she's feeling very insecure. And of course she's sort of set up, you know, by being fully staffed by people that she didn't choose and that they're kind of judging her and waiting for her to fail. Like that's what it feels like, is that whole room is people that aren't really supporting her mission and stuff, you know?
Yeah, because she's only doing and taking what she's given permission for.
Right.
And that's part of the story, is that you can try to change all these people or you can literally just stop asking for permission and do what you want.
Right.
And so,
but of course, again, her way into an actual relationship with the CFO is empathy.
Right. I think that's who she is too, as a person. And I like that. I like that because she could also just be like, hey, you're being a bitch. Stop being a bitch. It's unacceptable. She could have been like really mean. And she kind of started out that way, where she was sort of mirroring back her behavior. It's not okay. It's not acceptable. How dare you talk to my friend like that? And then she sees the snow globes and then she softens and she's like, oh, I see me and you. I see you. Yeah. And I like that it was a deep episode because they really delved into things that were like weird to me. Like there was a one-liner that I thought was not funny, and I thought it was a little tone deaf, and it was a one miss for me of Ted Lasso, where Keeley and Rebecca are in the stands and they're talking, and Rebecca's going on and on about the heartbreaking story about Rupert and how she was a bartender and how he's going to end up getting
Zava.
Zava is, I think it's Zava is how you say his name, is making him feel like he made her feel like chosen, seen, or whatever. And she told the story of how she was bartending, and the first night he came in with his wife, and
Right.
then for 6 weeks after that he came in every night. And Keeley says there's a fine line between stalking and romance, and I found that less funny and more disturbing, to be honest. I got the joke of it, but like, that is the whole entire thing about like restraining orders and stuff. There's a fine line between stalking and romance, and that's sort of the argument used. And so I thought that was a little off. It made me a little icky feeling, when she said that, because that is a thing.
I wonder if she was trying to I think Rebecca was looking back at this as like the romance that led her to still be basically obsessed with and like building her life around Rupert, whether it's against or with, and Keeley saying, actually that was just a million red flags what you were seeing there.
Ah, I love that. Okay, that makes a lot more sense because I did not tease that out. And again, that's my own stuff. I was so sort of, activated by that one phrase. I was like, oh, it's sort of gross. But
Maybe
yeah,
she's
that's
saying
exactly what she's saying, I think, is like, this wasn't
he
romance.
was showing who he was. He was instantly the creep. I mean,
Well, Sarah laying down the education today. I love
I
it.
think that's how
I
I took
think
it. But
too,
again, I'm
because
all Team Keeley all the time, so I don't know. You know that she's very insightful, but
it makes sense within the context of the show, and that's what put me off a little bit, was that I was just like, why would they put such a weird line in? But I do remember now, because again, I just watched it before we did this recap, because I watched it a few times. I do remember it's like she wasn't laughing or
no.
smiling. She was just like looking, not even at Rebecca, and straight ahead. And she said, there's a fine line between stalking and romance. And she said,
Right.
I guess there's a fine line between stalking and romance. That totally makes sense what you said,
I guess
Sarah.
I got boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you show like the other thing of the people that are still not showing their strength in some ways, and one of them is Beard. And Beard's leaving for the night, and Ted says, because he's still dating Jane, so tell your girlfriend that I said hello. And he says, I can't tell her that because she's still threatened by our friendship.
And then he's like, la la la,
Yeah,
bye-bye.
yeah.
Cap on, gotta go. Right. So
Like,
he recognizes
what?
again, he recognizes the red flag.
He's
He
wearing
sees
them
it
like a cap.
in on this, but he just is can't seem to get away from her. Yeah.
He's pretending he's a bull. He's a bull, and there's a bullfight, and he's running towards the red flag.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And
He's decided that this is, and I mean, I think it sounds like from previous seasons that he's got a history of always too high. He's got a history of always choosing, people that aren't good for him, that aren't healthy, aren't processed. Sorry,
the
I've got a little smoke
interruption of Sarah
again.
saying hi is that her really super cute greyhound just came on screen, is now I'm now basically doing a
Oh,
podcast
up in my business.
with
Hello, babies.
a greyhound. Oh my goodness, so cute. Yeah, I agree with you though. Like that to me was just it just unfazed, and he just moved on with the night. Like that wasn't a very weird thing to say.
Well, and remember that Leslie confronted him. He said, "This person is bad for you, and I
Yeah.
want the best for you." And Beard was like, "Yep, I know."
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, that's just kind of where he is at this point,
And then the conversation with Rebecca and her mom,
Yeah, that was
and
really random. Yeah.
but she says, her mom states to Rebecca when she's telling her that she should see her psychic, and she's like, oh, your psychic's gonna allow me to see her for a ton of money. And she said, no, I think she's thinking about it. And her
Right.
mom says, clearly, it's clear in your life you need some maternal guidance right now.
Like, right.
Are you not her mom? What are you talking about?
Well, so I think that that's meant to give us insights into why Rebecca is the way she is too, right? Like, so, you know, because she had just told us, I can't remember the sequence of things, but that, you know, is Rupert paying attention to, like, Rupert, this yeah. bad person with a million red flags, gave her all this attention. So she was obligated to want him then, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Didn't, I mean, and so I think that, that they're showing us, like, okay, this is the basis of that, is that her mom was either just flaky or negligent, or, you know, I mean, even if there's always been a sense that it's an obligatory relationship more than an actual, like, tender, close one, you yeah. know?
Yeah. How tender and close can you be with a supervillain?
You know? Well, I meant with her mom.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But
same. Yeah.
Yeah.
Same, actually.
His billowing capes and stuff, yeah. like, supervillain thing, they are going all in on that with Rupert. It's yeah, pretty funny.
It's very Batman-esque, you know.
Well, or Darth Vader, really, right?
Yeah, true. Yeah, but it's like, it reminds me, this the actual scene and lighting and everything reminds me of Batman, the older, like, 90s style Batman movies, where Gotham is always, like, it's always raining and it's always dark yes. out, and it's That's, very yeah. like shadowy lighting. It does, the cinematography is very much, to me, the supervillain scenes of Batman.
That's a great point. Up in a tower away from everybody else.
And, yes. Yeah. Yes. Just the whole thing is very, very strange and laughable at a certain point.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that sort of brings us to the end, which is the line I thought was so funny when everybody's out of the office and Ted and Trent are talking, and Trent says, "Sport, that's a hell of a metaphor." And Ted says, "Also a great nickname, Night Sport." So, you know, from now on, Trent's going to be called Sport for the rest of the
yeah.
rest of the season.
I'm so glad that I read a little something that that actor, I'm trying to remember his name, who plays Chen Krim, was going to just be gone. You know, like, they kind of wrapped his character, and he had a conversation about what they could do with the character still. And so I'm so glad they are. I love him. I think the actor's phenomenal. Yeah. I think just his reactions to, like, he adds kind of some depth. He's definitely going to be a diamond dog within, like, 10 seconds, you yeah. know, and you know he's got all this, like, humor and weirdness and awkwardness, like, to offer, in addition to his, like, cool and sophistication. I mean, I really like that, you know?
And I like also they show his vulnerability when he's trying to make up with Roy. He says yeah. that line where he says, "I can understand to some degree how you feel trying to find fulfillment in a second career, because I don't even know if I found one in the first."
Yes.
And so he's hiding all this cool suaveness and meanness when he was mean and trying to be edgy right. behind vulnerability and security.
I'm
and
sorry.
Not feeling.
The dog is so loud. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear anything.
Simmer down. Okay.
Yeah, but with vulnerability and everything. So it was fascinating to me.
Yeah.
You know, that they also really divulge his weak spot. They basically divulge everybody's weak spots in this, in a sense, or strengths. I like they went back and forth.
Well, and real quick, I was going to say about Keely too, and the strengths that you're talking about is, so I'm watching this with my kid. And so when Shandy makes the, you know, the client's not real happy about something, how it's going, and Shandy makes a suggestion and Keely takes it, my kid goes, "Oh, she's going to be jealous. She's going to be mad because she," like, he's assuming that Keely's insecure where she mm-hmm. is. And it does feel like that would be a natural thing, but yeah. because we're such an evolved show or such an evolved character, instead she's thrilled and wants to add her to the team.
Yeah.
You know, that she's got somebody, like, I mean, there's, and so that's very Ted-like. Now yeah. about Ted real quick, they are really emphasizing how little he cares or knows about his job. Like, he's very, yeah. very bad at his job. He's only there as, like, a personnel manager. He doesn't, I mean, so he's literally reading, like, soccer 101 book right
now. And said he didn't like it. He just threw it away. He's like, "I couldn't get past the introduction," and tossed it
yeah.
down.
So yeah. this is 3 seasons and he's made zero effort to learn the thing he's supposed to be teaching others, basically, or, you know, so, and so there's something there. And then also, like, that he doesn't know who, what's his name? Zarda.
Zava. Yeah.
Zava or whatever, that he doesn't have a clue who that is. Like, he's so deliberately plugged out of what's happening. Yeah. There's something there too. You
That's
know?
A great point.
And so at the end, you know, so it ends with him, like, a kind of a melancholy song and him kind of staring off into space. So what do you think he's thinking in that moment? What is that landing, the very end of the episode?
It felt very lonely because he kept reaching out, asking people if they wanted to do something, and everybody had something to do.
Interesting. Yes.
And I think for me, it felt like, again, what the hell am I doing here? Mm-hmm. Beard has found somebody and he doesn't even care that she doesn't value our friendship. Maybe you don't value our friendship as much as I thought you did. Right. To be with this person. I mean, I don't know if he's thinking that or not, but it does seem very melancholy and, you know, very sad that he's yet again by himself. He's not allowing himself to even think about a relationship because he doesn't seem to be thinking that it's permanent there, that he's not even trying.
Right.
He's just being his friendly self.
Not investing, because you're right. So it seems like he's not really investing in relationships outside of work. I mean, mm-hmm. these are all work related. He's getting paid to have all these relationships that he has, right? Mm-hmm. So he's not investing in outside relationships, but he's also not investing in the job, in the mm-mm. thing that, you know, outside of. So it is interesting how he's spending his like emotional energy and stuff, you know?
And I think they're going to end up addressing somewhere the fact that, like, I would imagine at some point that they would talk about alcohol.
Oh, they are. Absolutely.
You know, because, you know, like that's all they do in their free time.
Exactly. Yep.
And so that would be nice if they did.
Lean very much into mental health, suicidal ideation, and substance abuse as coping and, you know, self-medicating and all that kind of stuff. Absolutely.
Yep. Well, I have to let the listeners know that before we started recording, Sarah said, I'm sick today. Can you lead the conversation? Because I'm just not really with it. Yeah, you were fire this entire episode. Even corrected me on my thing with Keely and Rebecca. You had great observations.
Because this show just like energizes me. Yeah, half of my head is just like I have an eyeball headache. You know,
just take the credit, Sarah. No excuses. Just take it. We're gonna make sure your kids contaminate you every week. You'll just be fire every week, and you'll have an eyeball coming out.
This believing in biscuits is tons of fun. I'm always going to wake up for this because I enjoy it so much having this conversation with you, and I love the show and thank you.
I agree. It has been a lot of fun. I'm really glad that you suggested it. So everybody that's enjoying it, you can thank Sarah. You can blow up her page, Sarah Z Writes, and thank her. It's Sarah Z Writer, correct?
Sarah Z Writer. Yep.
Yes. So on both Instagram and Facebook, you can look at her work. You can blow her up and say thank you for having this great idea. We're loving it because they are. People are telling me they're loving it.
I just enjoy this time with you every week. So whether or not anybody's on board with us or not, I'm here for it.
Okay, I'm sorry. Sarah says, screw you. She doesn't care if you like it. I'm just kidding. We're kidding. Oh. I can take advantage a little bit when she is not thinking clearly. So I like that.
All right. Well, thank you and toodles. And we'll be back next week.
Thank you for listening to What Won't She Say? You can find us at whatwontshesay.com, on Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere else that you like to find your podcast.